The high-profile instances of people from Afghanistan and Haiti seeking refuge in America this summer has prompted a renewed discussion about New York's role as a destination for refugees. In light of this backdrop, we wanted to highlight a new book, Immigration, Key to the Future, The Benefits of Resettlement to Upstate New York, which was published by the State Bar Association. And joining us is the book's editor-in-chief, Scott Fine, a partner at Whiteman, Osterman & Hanna in Albany, and a fellow at the Rockefeller Institute. Welcome to the show, Scott.
Thank you very much.
So for starters, can you talk about why refugees have ended up in upstate New York to begin with, and what they've meant for their new communities?
There are two aspects. The first is, and maybe I can touch for a moment on the anomaly. Unlike immigrants, your traditional immigrants who can choose where they want to resettle, refugees, who are here because their countries of origin are perilous to these people, are resettled by the federal government. And so in our case, 90% of all refugees, well more than 50 ethnic and cultural groups, have been resettled in upstate New York. So as opposed to downstate, where most immigrants are settled. So suddenly you have, since 2002, even before, you have these refugees who are at it usually 5,000 a year, sometimes the number is greater, moving into upstate communities. Some of these communities were hospitable. Some of these communities were skeptical. Often they were more conservative than those downstate. And what we found is that these individuals came here to make a new life for themselves, and they had a great deal of energy, and they moved into these upstate communities who were in economic and demographic trouble. Their numbers had declined. People had migrated out. There had been a fair amount of outward migration. Births were declining. Deaths were exceeding births. And they didn't know what they would do. Buffalo lost more than 50% of its population. Syracuse, a comparable number. Utica, even more. And these were not cities that were destined for greatness. The refugees were resettled in these cities. They looked at housing, dilapidated housing, and they saw not McMansions, but they saw things that they could renovate. They were entrepreneurial. They took jobs that other people did not take. They brought a certain energy. And one of the things that we found was that when we spoke to the elected officials and business leaders, some of whom were skeptical when these refugees came, their response now is they are part of our community. And in many of these communities, they're trying to increase the resettlement of refugees and, in fact, lure them from other areas because they have been such a net positive.
It's interesting to hear you talk about that skepticism, and you also noted that some of these upstate communities can be more conservative than downstate communities. But that language that you're using, it kind of sounds like coded language to essentially say these are racist areas who didn't want, you know, people of color, who were often refugees, to settle there, because I don't think they're necessarily the most liberal people who are coming there. So, I mean, is that kind of what you're getting at? Are these areas who potentially didn't want to have people of color settling there, or am I misinterpreting?
It might be a bit of a misinterpretation. New York State, it certainly isn't racist. By conservative, assume a synonym for that would be areas upstate are often more homogeneous. So when you have a good deal of homogeneity, the notion that individuals from Bosnia or Syria or Somalia parachute into their environment, it's not like New York City, which is a you know, a huge heterogeneous community, and everyone's used to everyone else. So it is not a presupposition. It's just suddenly you have 500 refugees from Somalia, and hi, we're your neighbors. Mm-hmm. So that is the context within which it is meant. And I should add that notwithstanding, and this is probably one of the good news stories, notwithstanding the homogeneity of some of our upstate communities, they responded over time with an enthusiasm that I think has bested some of our downstate communities.
Right. So in order to ensure a successful resettlement, what needs to happen to ensure that there's, I guess, a smooth transition? For example, do we need targeted services and support systems to the new Americans?
Indeed. And in fact, to that extent, New York State is well ahead of the curve. We, just by number, we accept more refugees than any other state other than California and Arizona. So we're dealing with a sizable number, 50,000 over since 2002, and that number is increasing materially now that the current administration has decided to increase the level from what it was during the prior administration, which was about 7,500, 10,000, to about 125,000. So that number will increase. So New York State has been great. It's the only state that has established an agency to facilitate the resettlement of refugees. And that's the Office of New Americans, which is embedded in the Department of State, the New York State Department of State. And they have dispatched navigators, they're really ambassadors, throughout upstate New York to help resettle these individuals. One of the interesting aspects is that resettlement in upstate New York and elsewhere has been viewed as a humanitarian gesture. It's something we're supposed to do as human beings. There are millions of refugees throughout the world, and we are supposed to do our bit. What gets lost is that these individuals, these refugees, are economic development drivers in upstate New York and elsewhere, Long Island in some measures, some of the boroughs of the city. And their value, it's in addition to making us feel good as individuals and doing the appropriate and humane thing, but looking through at it through a different lens, we need refugees to offset the demographic declines, to take the jobs that remain unfilled, to open up new stores. And so one of the things that one hopes comes out of this book and the documentary that will follow is that we will begin to look at the influx of refugees as an economic development driver, as something which can buoy our local economies.
So what was the impetus for this book?
As you know, in Albany, we have some modest, energetic public research centers. They're referred to in the popular lexicon as think tanks. And among them is the Rockefeller Institute, which can access its 62 campuses for researchers, the Government Law Center at Albany Law School, and the New York State Bar Association, which has 73,000 members. And each of these focuses on different public policy issues. The think tank area is really dominated by Pew Foundation, Brookings, Cato. So the question became, how can we harness our efforts to look at some of these more important initiatives and really punch above our weight, as they say in the research area? And so we got together Rockefeller Institute and Government Law Center, New York State Bar Association, and we began to look first at the state constitution, and then we went on to immigration. And one of the things we found in preparing our first book on immigrants' rights is that what I'd mentioned before, that New York State settles upstate more than, or about 90% of all refugees. And we asked ourselves, is there a way to study what the impact of these refugees have been in these communities? And we're not talking about one or two counties, but well more than half the counties upstate have been impacted by the refugees. So then we took the second step, and we said, well, how do we do this? And one of the problems that that academics have is books are written by one or two academics, which means that their perspective predominates. And as the Pew Foundation said, very few people read academic publications. And I say this, and I apologize to my colleagues as I say this, but cover to cover. And really, the only people who end up reading it cover to cover are those people who agree with the premise of the author, so they can cite it. It's sort of a closed loop. Now, that doesn't always happen, and I'm not being fair. But we decided for purposes of our collaborative effort that in any publication, and we've done this with three books so far, we will assemble a number of authors with different perspectives and ask them to share their views on the topic at issue based upon data, statistical, demographic data. And then we would, so in this case, we asked 30 authorities to do that, including statisticians and demographers from Cornell. And they wrote 30 articles. And then we tried to distill those 30 articles and identify consensus perspectives, which perhaps could begin to inform public policy. So that is the predicate for what we have done.
So considering the fact that this book has been written by academics, but is in a book form and not necessarily like a scholarly article, are you hoping that it permeates into the wider culture? And if it does, are you hoping that it accomplishes anything as a result of reaching a broader audience than it might normally otherwise be the topic of discussion for?
In sort of reverse order, yes. We think you always hope that it permeates sort of broader consciousness. And why is that? Because the essence of the book is we dispel myths, or we the authors seek to dispel myths. For example, immigrants strain the safety net and take precious jobs. Well, the data that has been compiled is clear that their financial contribution is materially greater than the cost of resettlement. Or immigrants increase crime. Well, the data demonstrates that that's simply not the case. It exists in the imagination, but not reality. Or my favorite is America no longer needs immigrants. Well, we have an aging workforce, a declining birth rate, and it's imperiling our future growth. Researchers believe that immigration is sort of the Hail Mary. But where do we go? Your question is good because getting into the consciousness and sort of influencing policy becomes a bit more challenging after the book is done. And so we've decided that we would proceed with a documentary, and we've engaged a documentarian who has just finished a film on Utica called The Last Refuge. And the purpose of that documentary will be to ask elected officials and business leaders and others how their opinion changed. And we'll find we have six locations, and we're going to say in these cities and elsewhere, what was your view before this happened, before the refugees arrived? And where are you now? And it is going to be the sense of I was surprised. And indeed, that's the name of the documentary, I Was Surprised. We will also ask refugees in these areas, how their attitude changed. A number of these refugees thought that when they'd be resettled, they'd end up going to New York City, which is, again, a more heterogeneous community, and they were skeptical. And now they consider themselves part of the network of these communities. How did that happen? And we think that there's a broader point. And the point is, it's hard to dislike someone you've gotten to know. And that seems to be the overarching theme in these communities. And then finally, again, to penetrate the public consciousness and the legislative process, the New York State Bar Association has agreed to develop a task force. And the purpose of the task force will be to look at the book and other sources of information and try to identify what we can do to support refugees, not only as a humanitarian measure, which, again, I do not want to marginalize, but really, given the fact that they have become so important to these smaller communities in order to increase their population, draw business, and just rehabilitate so many things.
Well, we've been speaking with Scott Fine. He is a partner at Whiteman, Osterman, Hanna in Albany and a fellow at the Rockefeller Institute and editor-in-chief of the new book, Immigration, Key to the Future, The Benefits of Resettlement to Upstate New York. Scott, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Oh, and thank you for taking the time. Be well.
And to get your own copy of the 446-page book, Immigration, Key to the Future, The Benefits of Resettlement to Upstate New York, visit the New York State Bar Association's website at nysba.org.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.